Goedert setting a screen.
Because a physical play, although Jordan Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Izzo's dying for a moving screen.
It's that dreaded moving screen.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Moving Screen podcast. I'm Brendan Quinn from The Athletic, here with Dylan Burkhart of UM Hoops. Dylan has made it back to Michigan or Ohio, wherever the hell you live. I'm still in Vegas. We did not record an in-person show this week because, you know what, folks? Sometimes Vegas wins.
It was a long weekend in Vegas, and you're only halfway through your bid there. You gotta rally. You're looking a little weary yourself.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty weary myself. So it's Tuesday around midday local time for me, mid-afternoon for you. I don't even see the finish line yet. I still got number one versus number two tonight to somehow rally for. And then championship of the Maui Invitational tomorrow. And then Duke Gonzaga on Friday. And then, mercifully, I will be disposed of by this godforsaken city. You got out of here last night taking the red eye.
Terrible decision. Whatever was going to make that decision, it wasn't worth it. It was just an awful choice. And I'm paying the consequences here.
Oh, no.
It was brutal, but I'm here. I don't really know what day it is, where I am, or what temperature it is, or what I'm supposed to be doing, whether I should be awake, asleep, eating, sleeping, working. No one knows, but we're here.
We're going to try to dial this thing.
Let's go.
We're going to try to not have a low energy pod. I got to do two of these back to back because I got to talk to Nick after this. That should be interesting. But we're going to deliver.
Let's bring it. This was the first time, I think, since COVID, I'd been to an in-person basketball game. So that was a good time. It was fun to be back in a fun environment. I think both those games in Vegas were a pretty good setup, and it was a good time. So we're going to get into it. What's the plan for today? You have a plan. So, you want to tell people the plan.
We have a plan. So this will be – we're going to be a little heavy on Michigan here because they just came out of two games that we obviously both saw in person. And there's – takeaways here, right? I mean, where this thing is right now kind of bears itself out to a lot of conversation. Michigan State, we're going to touch on Atlantis, but our pod early next week with them coming out of three games in Atlantis will kind of be flipped. That'll be heavier Michigan State. We're going to kind of dive into some early season takes on them. Today is going to be more Michigan for all the obvious reasons. So
you mean the next pod's not a Michigan Tarleton State deep dive?
No, I don't. Where is that?
Chrysler?
No, not the game, the school.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't written my preview yet because I was on a red-eye flight overnight. So I'll get back to you at some point.
We're going to find this out right now. That we can't leave. It is in Stevensville, Texas.
Any school that you haven't really heard of, probably in Texas.
Let's get into this thing.
Get into it.
So the first game here in Vegas, kind of a steady showing from Michigan. It more than anything set up the game you wanted to play, getting Arizona, you know, a good non-conference game for all purposes, both the test now and the resume later. And, you know, Michigan got smacked. They got smacked pretty good. It's not something that's totally outside of normalcy, right? These games have happened before. I feel like this showing and Michigan kind of being outmatched was very reminiscent of a number of games. Louisville, 2019, North Carolina in
17, 18, UCLA.
You know, at that UCLA game, and that was, I think, 16, and that game at SMU, which I think was the year before that, in 15. So that has been seen before, but, you know, sometimes games and showings like this reveal a lot that it are that kind of speak to what are going to be long-term issues. And sometimes it is actually invaluable for the lessons learned, helps teams kind of find a way forward. We'll obviously find out what this does for Michigan, right? Good and bad, what it means, so to speak. But let's get into what your kind of takeaways were from 2 days in the desert.
Yeah, I mean, if Michigan needed anything to work on, like, they got plenty of it with the losses to Arizona and Seton Hall. Right? Like, Seton Hall, they lost that game. It was really an execution issue, I think, down the stretch, where they could have won the game, whereas Arizona just whooped them off the floor. Like, Arizona was the better team. Basically, across the board, Arizona looked more prepared. Arizona was yelling out Michigan sets. Michigan was hardly talking on defense, stuff like that. Like, that's what you notice when you just – you could see the level of preparation. I think Michigan – it was – I was really taken – Michigan played a really tight rotation against UNLV. It was kind of the rotation we've seen. And then Michigan kind of just played everyone against Arizona. And Juwan Howard today was talking about how – they went to the bench and then they never really got back on track with the game. But if you go back and look at some of the lineup combinations, like, there's new combos, like, nothing ever seems completely comfortable, I feel like, with this team right now. I don't know. There's times Eli Brooks is the point guard. There's times Devontae Jones is the point guard. There's times they're playing two bigs. There's times they're playing one big. I'm not sure that people who are switching positions always realize what position they're in when they're on the court. It's just a lot of moving pieces that sort of explains how you end up with a team that just doesn't look comfortable being itself. Like, I don't know what this team is gonna, like, their defining identity is, right? They haven't found it yet. And right now it's basically Eli Brooks go make a play. And Eli Brooks has been really, really good this year. I'd say he's by far their most improved player. He's doing things that he really struggled to do in previous years. Mm-hmm. But Eli Brooks just being your offense and your best defender and your best leader, it's too much to ask for Eli Brooks, as good as he can be, as a kind of like a great college player. So that's kind of where I start, is you look at every position. It's okay. You can see how this could work out, but I don't know what the answer is, right? Caleb Houston. Okay. He needs to be that guy. He's not that guy. So what do you do? At the four, you have all these different pieces. You don't really know which one's going to work and what you're going to go into a game with, which it's hard to just react on the fly. So that's, I just don't see the consistency with what Michigan wants to be yet. And that's obviously, that's how you lose a game like this, where Arizona, I think, had a plan. And Arizona's interesting because in their blowouts early, they played a bunch of guys. But in that Michigan game, they played a tight rotation. They used the guys who were playing off the bench much less, and they stuck to their best players, and they looked like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, and I think it's especially jarring because for a while now with Michigan, right, you were just used to a certain level of role definition, of kind of taking care of the ball, of shot making, right, and having multiple shooters and out there at any given time and things like that. And there are times right now where it's not just mental mistakes and busted plays, right, that you can chalk up to, hey, there's a couple freshmen on the court, they got confused. Or, hey, it's November, right? Shit happens and guys mess up on plays. In truth, there's that. Plus, there's just carelessness with the ball. There's a degree of just bad passes being thrown. There are times when there's lineups on the floor with multiple players who don't need to be defended as perimeter shooters right now. Even a guy like Caleb Houston, who's supposed to be your best shooter, he's shooting 20-something percent. You know, there's only two guys on the team shooting better than 31% on threes, Eli and Devontae Jones, right? They are, as a team, 272nd nationally in shooting. They're 28%, right? They're 4 for 29, those two losses on threes. Like, you're just not going to win if you're not making shots. And it's that combined with this, just a lot of unforced errors. Their non-steal turnover percentage is 12% on KenPom. And like, if you look at the other teams that are like other high major teams that are in that area, I was looking at this earlier today. It's like, Missouri, right? Butler, just like teams that have been having like kind of some serious issues this year. And Michigan's in that, it is way better than those teams, but has similar issues right now.
Yeah. But those are a lot of those are the play where, oh, you don't run the right play. That's when you throw the ball in bounds, right? Like that's fair.
That's fair.
Like you can't win against a good team if you five times down the court, you just don't run the right play. Like that's not really, it's not like high school. Like you have to get to a point where that's not happening. And that's also things that are correctable and will get better. I think it's a lot easier to get everyone running the right offensive sets compared to, I think Michigan's defense is like a far bigger long-term concern that's going to actually take a lot of work.
They got to get that PJ page. They got to get that PJ Tucker picture back out. Dylan. That
PJ Tucker picture.
Yeah, when so our seats were great, right? We're pretty close to the court. We're sitting right next to each other. And the second half of the Michigan's defense was in front of us. Right.
Yeah.
Am I remembering that correctly? And the lack of communication was jarring. Nobody was talking. Nobody. And Arizona was just absolutely dissecting pretty much every possession down court.
Yeah, I think the biggest red flag of Michigan's defense is if you look at some of the numbers, one of the kind of hallmarks or pillars of what Juwan Howard's defense has been is preventing three-point shots. And Michigan's giving out 202nd three-point volume allowed. And they've been lucky in the sense that teams are only shooting 25% from three. But that's, to me, very symbolic of how many defensive breakdowns this team has had. And when you're giving up these spot-up opportunities that your whole defense is designed to prevent. And that's what you look at and you're like, if you can't be the team you want to be defensively, that's something that's going to take time to correct. Like making shots, whatever, that'll come. Caleb Houston's going to make shots. Other guys will make shots. Like, whatever. Shooting comes and goes. But when you're actually giving up significantly worse shots or significantly better shots for the opposition, like higher value shots, that's an issue. And you can't just be in, like, Michigan's just overhelping and late to help and recovery. It's just, they're basically a mess defensively. Yes. Arizona did a really good job of, they played fast and they flow into, basically, they call it like actions, not sets, right? They just have concepts that they run and they get into it really quickly, which puts you at a disadvantage if you can't match up. So Michigan was cross-matched a lot and just in weird defensive matchups, and then you're just all of a sudden giving up a dunk, right? So that was the big issue for Michigan defensively. And that, I think we've seen a few games here where that's an actual issue. Like, it's not like that was just an Arizona game issue. Right. I think that those defensive corrections are going to be really interesting because the numbers there are not real pretty. I don't know.
I mean, they lost by 18 and it could have been significantly worse. Like Arizona went 4 for 21. Arizona scored 1.13 points per possession, despite going 4 for 21 on threes. You know, they shot 65% on twos. But, like, a lot of the threes that they missed were open. Like, Creason missed a couple really good looks that this could have even been a 25, 28-point loss. Now, obviously, offensive rebounding and whatever, some of those ended up turning into extra possessions. But the point remains, like, as bad as it was, it could have even been worse.
I think what you really have to look at is when Michigan won games last year, it won from the inside out, right? It was paint scoring and paint defense that was kind of the hallmark of what made Michigan a really good team. So when you play that way, and Michigan's still trying to play that way as far as they're just going to be the bigger team around the basket, right? Like, you're playing two bigs, Michigan's offensive rebounding more than they ever have. They're getting to the free throw line. They're doing all those things. But if you run up against a team that's going to win that battle, you're going to lose, right? Like, Arizona is a great team defending the paint. In the games Michigan lost badly last, like the Illinois game, it was kind of the same thing last year where, okay, well, Kofi Coburn's better at defending the rim and scoring at the rim. What are we going to do instead? They didn't do anything. And that is a little bit of a parallel, I would say. I thought Arizona did some really good stuff to get Tabellos involved. Like the two bigs, they played really well off each other. But it is interesting. Like, Michigan has played two losses against two very big teams that are interesting mismatches. So I'll be curious how much of those are just things that are going to bother Michigan in every matchup, or if it's more of like the bully running into a bigger bully sort of thing where Michigan's game plan just isn't really equipped to work in those situations. But I think there's just individually across the board, I think there's just places where Michigan just needs to play better, I would say. And it's not even just like everyone wants to talk about Devontae Jones, Caleb Houston, because they're new, but I mean, Hunter Dickinson defensively to me hasn't been the same player he was last year. And that's, that's like an actual concern, I would say, because other guys are going to get better. They're going to adjust. That'll take time, but I don't know why Hunter hasn't been that locked in defensively. And he really anchored that whole Michigan defense last year. And he's not doing that this year.
Yeah. I mean, Brandon Johns has been a better defensive player than Dickinson this year. I think you could make the case at minimum they're equal. And I don't think that would even have been in the conversation last year, maybe at the end of the year. But
do you want to talk a little bit about Caleb Houston? I'm curious.
I want to get into the point guards. I want to get into Houston. So you can take it in whatever order you want.
All right. Caleb Houston, for me, that Seton, like, he looks just like a shell-shocked player. I think the Seton Hall game and just the level of competition and length that he faced in that game sort of just wiped him off the court, and he's just completely searching for it. He was one of 14 from three over the last week, after starting 5 of 12. I thought he hunted his shot pretty aggressively in those early season games. Even the Buffalo game, when he was getting roasted on defense, he was looking for a shot, making shots. He seems completely spooked, rattled, whatever you want to say. And I have confidence that he'll find his game offensively. I think this bigger worries are still about what he is defensively, but I don't care. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think you and I talked about a little bit about this. I can't remember if it was on the pod or just over beer or whatever, but like there's this, that adjustment period of not only going from high school to college, but also like there were a lot of times in high school while he was being talked about as a projected lottery pick down the line, he was like the third, fourth, fifth option on his own team. And it's a little bit different. You know, obviously he's still, he's not the top option at Michigan, but there's a level of need for him to be really good in really big games, right? Like when they're playing their best games, Seton Hall and Arizona, those are games where he has to be like your first, second, or third best scorer, right? Without a doubt. And
second or third, I would say, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a different, I think it speaks to the adjustment period that is relatively natural. Missing shots, I don't know, like you feel silly kind of overreacting to miss shots, right? And today's November 23rd. We're not even at Thanksgiving yet. He's the thing that's happening right now. There, it is catch and think. It is not catch and react. It is not catch and react, right?
It's the passing up shots that's the concern. And that's where I think he's kind of stuck mentally. Whereas if you're thinking a split second before you shoot, you're going to miss your shot. You're going to take the wrong shot, make the wrong read. And that's what he's doing. I think beyond just being whatever option offensively, the real thing is he's the only wing on the entire roster. So he has to defend the best wing on the other team, and he has to provide that wing spot up play, whether it's getting downhill or shooting threes. Like, there's not really another real wing on this Michigan roster. And that does put a lot of roster pressure on him, just because like so much of what Michigan runs, the outlet is to the wing who's going to make something happen, right? Like if you're running a ball screen, the kick out to the wing was a huge part of what Michigan did. And that ability to attack off once you like on an against an unsettled situation is what made Franz Wagner so good, what made Isaiah Livers so good. And they need that outlet to make everything else kind of fit into place. I mean, it's not like Michigan has like four bye games in a row. So he's got to figure it out on the fly, right? Like they play Tarleton State and then you're going to UNC and playing San Diego State. Those dudes have like UNC doesn't play any defense, but it's still like your first road game. And then San Diego State does play defense. They have length. They have all these things. So it's tough. Michigan's lead up to the season is just such a more difficult challenge than it was last year. Like I think that really helped paper over some early season issues that last year's team could have potentially had. And they really found a confidence by sort of just playing a team like Buffalo every game for a month. This isn't that, and there's not really any real time for it. I think he would have really benefited if they played all their bye games the first week of the season. You know what I mean?
Seeing shots fall. Right.
So that's it. That's where I'm at with Caleb.
Is there, you talk about not having any other true wing, right? The closest other thing they have is Terrence Williams, who, is more of a forward, kind of just, he is very much his own thing. And beyond that, it's Isaiah Barnes, and he's played 3 minutes this year. So they're clearly not projecting him to be a piece. Between that and kind of the, lack of secondary options in the backcourt right now, how worried are you about kind of just how the limits of this roster construction, or is that is it too early to have that conversation?
I still think if Caleb Houston is the guy that people want Caleb Houston to be by Christmas, you're fine. You don't need multiple guys if you have one guy who can do what you brought him to do. Mm-hmm. So I also think that the guards could potentially play up, and that could be something that fixes some of Michigan's concerns, is if you can play a third guard, whether it's Kobe Bufkin, whether it's Zeb Jackson. So Zeb Jackson is back from his COVID-related illness, or non-COVID-related illness.
Easy.
Dressed in Vegas, but he hasn't practiced yet. So
yeah,
he could be working back over time if that's a thing. So those kind of guys, if you play them at the three, you can maybe get a little bit more dynamic and perimeter oriented if someone can really step up. But the guard rotation just seems to be sort of see what sticks each game. I can't understand why Kobe Bufkin will be the first guard off the bench, play all the reserve guard minutes, and then not play the next game. I don't see him playing terribly. And then Frankie Collins will come in and give point guard minutes, but then he won't play the next game. So I can't get a feel for that at all. I could see a situation where, okay, Michigan's in 2 games in 3 days, they're in the Pacific time zone, guys are tired. You want to play more guys, but why is, I don't know. It just doesn't really add up to me. The way the guard minutes have been handled in the backcourt, which makes me think no one's particularly close to actually having a lock on that role either, though, right? It's not like someone's busting through ready to be that guy.
And there are times it almost feels like they're trying to steal minutes from guys, right? Like a Nunez, or you're getting them in there almost to just steal minutes. That's one thing against a certain level opponent. You do that against Arizona, and suddenly a game where you had some flow, right? At one point they were leading 20 to 16 or 16 to 12 or 20 to 19, right? And they got through the first 12 minutes of that game looking okay. It was clearly a very evenly matched game. And then it just went off the rails, and they just didn't have a response because the talent level shifted dramatically in the course of the game. You know what I mean? And then Michigan never got back. They just never could kind of recapture some of the things that they were doing earlier. And that's always going to be, if you can't go past 7 and you're trying to go past 7, this is what's going to happen, right? And
rotation wise?
Yes, yes. So, and some of this stems from Devontae Jones not staying on the floor. And so I want to talk to you about the point guard play, right? Because I thought you made a great point earlier where the lack of continuity in that spot is something that's especially jarring from what you're used to watching at Michigan to what is occurring now, where there are times that it is Eli Brooks. There are times that it is Devontae Jones. There are times that Devontae Jones looks like he can be the long-term answer. And there are times where he just does, some things where you're say, okay, man, these are lessons being learned the hard way, but you're going to take L's if you're learning them at that time,
Yeah. I find the how often Eli's been on the ball pretty fascinating. Devontae, I think, has shown like he can, like statistically, if you were to line his numbers up against Mike Smith, they'd be close. But for me, what's different is that he's not that point guard who's in complete control of the game. And it's sort of this yo-yo back and forth of who's running the team, which I think generally is just going to make everything a bit more disjointed, right? Like it's
hard to play that.
If everyone's running the set the same way all the time, sure. But if you're going to have Eli running the offense half the time and Devontae running the offense half the time, it feels like they both do some things and it makes sense. And you're trying to like figure it out. You trust Eli maybe to make the right read and not make mistakes. But I think Devontae has more upside as a playmaker. Like Devontae can see passes and make passes that I don't think Eli can. Eli will not make bad passes as much, right? Like he'll be a lower risk option. And Eli's also been incredible scoring out of ball screens for what we've seen over four years before this. So I get why you're trying to do both things, but like everyone talk about the fouls of Devontae Jones, and that's fine. Like he's made some bad fouls. He's averaging over an offensive foul a game. Like that, those things will adjust over time. The bigger issue is that Devontae Jones, when he's on the court, is not quite the player Michigan needs. And I think I'm not sure in that game when Devontae was out for stretches, that it was like a rush to get Devontae Jones back in the game. It was more like, he's not out there.
You don't think they took a noticeable step back when he came out of the game?
I think he was up and down. I don't think it was like he was dominating the game or had control of the game.
There's a difference between him being up and down and what he can do and the alternative.
Sure, but I don't think – I just haven't ever really thought, wow, Devontae's in control of this thing. It looks good. Sure. You need Devontae running this. And that's what Michigan needs from Devontae Jones. Like for even just a 4 or 6 minute segment, like if he can just kind of have that feel of running the show, that's what Michigan needs.
He also needs, in order to develop that, in order to develop this, hey, you are the point guard, right? Like, this is what it's going to look like. Take control of this thing, right? And develop that pace and feel and familiarity with your teammates and all that stuff. You have to stay on the floor. You can't be getting put on the bench 8 minutes into a half because you got two fouls. And I understand your point about like that fouls might be overblown. But he has to stay on the floor. If this is going to develop into what you need it to, right? Like that has to get brushed out. And you can't commit your third foul at the 18-minute mark of the second half, 75 feet from the basket.
Like those are things that over his feet.
He just ran into a guy bringing the ball up the court for no reason. These things have to kind of get wiped out. And a lot of it is, you know, he's probably trying to do a lot. And much of this is totally understandable. But if there's any chance that this is going to work itself out where he becomes the clear point guard and Eli Brooks can kind of more so maintain an off the ball role and you put him in ball screens because he is doing a lot of good stuff there. Jones has to play, man. Like he's got to stay out there and he needs to take control a little bit.
That's fine. But like take the UNLV game. I don't think he played that game 36 minutes. And I don't think he ever he made too many mistakes in his role. Not like the mistakes that we're talking about with fouls and all that, but like he's not making the consistent right plays on both sides of the court to the extent Michigan needs. That's what he needs. You'd rather him do that where you are like, wow, we need Devontae Jones on the court. Whereas in the Arizona game, like, I don't know, maybe Frankie Collins needs reps because who knows? Like maybe this isn't working. Like I felt some of that in that game where I think the bigger concern with Devontae is can he make the consistent smart play on offense and defense for long stretches more than can he stay out of foul trouble? Like, Devontae Jones playing better is the first priority. And Devontae Jones fitting in, he gambles a lot on defense. And it's not always gambling for that leads to fouls or things like that. It's like just leads to not being solid. And that's that sort of thing is something that puts everyone else in help side and in rotations.
We don't need
to be. It's stuff like that. I mean, Juwan almost lost it on him when he tried to get a steal before that led to a wide open three late in that UNLV game. Like that, those are the things that need to get cleaned up with Devonte.
And he's five games in.
Yeah.
He's five games into doing this.
If Michigan would have played that Arizona team at this point in last year, I don't think Mike Smith would have had a good game.
No.
So
that team.
Like, they did have some issues like that, and I feel like it's easy to forget that in hindsight. But he doesn't look – I just want to see a game. Like, these bye games are a great chance for this. Like, can Devonte Jones run the show? Can Michigan get in and out of its sets efficiently? And that just hasn't been the case right now. And it's not just him. I think it's harder. Like last year's team, there were guys who knew what they were doing to run all the sets, right? Like you had Eli, Franz, Isaiah along the wing. That's basically all your off ball stuff. Everyone has been doing this, right? So that, that is different, but I think that's where I'm looking at for a big shift is, can Devonte be a comfortable point guard? Right now he's been like a productive guard, but I don't think he's really even been Michigan's point guard for so much that's troubling.
Right. And like playing Arizona so like hyper underlined this the idea of like what it means to have someone who is like your clear boy. General. My man, Kirk Kreese. I mean, that dude, but like he didn't even shoot the ball well, but he was in such control of that game every time he was on the floor. 7 assists, no turnovers, like just, and it's not only the decisions he made, but it is like everyone on the floor knew to get him the ball. Everyone on the floor fed off of what he did. They fed off his energy, right? Like that's another thing with this team a little bit right now. Like, I don't know what the internal, you know, who are people listening to, right? Like, who is the guy? Is there anyone in that locker room with any like level of shit talk, of juice, of swagger, or any of that, whatever you want to call it, right? Like, I know this is narrative stuff, but like that is real. You know what I mean? Like, good teams have that shit to them, and this team does not right now, and it has to come from somewhere. Dickinson's the obvious answer, but
that was not Hunter Dickinson this weekend.
That was not
out of the game with 9 minutes left or something like that. 18-point game. I don't know. I get he's tired, whatever, but I thought that was a weird moment in that game. Eli Brooks is like the captain, but he's also not really like a fiery energy guy who's gonna get in someone's face or anything like that.
Yes.
I feel like Hunter is supposed to be that guy based on how the roster is set up. I don't really know where else it comes from, the way this team set up, like Terrence Williams, but I mean, it's not like there's not really a fiery person who's playing enough minutes to be that guy. Right. And that should be Hunter. I think it's just kind of a gut check couple of weeks for Hunter Dickinson.
I think
he can dominate against like UNC. Like that's a good matchup for him in a lot of ways because they have a lot of bigs and they're not real big into defending. He hasn't looked as, I don't know, defensively, I think there are red flags with Hunter that are troubling a bit. And I don't know, like for me, he just lacks a little bit of burst or explosiveness. And maybe it's like an early season thing or something, but I think the Seton Hall game, he struggled to get to rebounds in the second half and like loose balls. And then this game, he just didn't. I mean, Koloko is a big human. Ooh. You don't see a lot of vertical ball screen threats like that as just lob guys like in the Big Ten. That's not something that could come around often as far as just how well he can move. And you have to defend a part of the court above the rim that most teams don't present a challenge there. So that's something to watch. I want to hit on one more thing here. Moves to Diabate. I feel like the two games out in Vegas were sort of the entire Musa Diabate experience. He looked like a lottery pick on whatever day, Friday it was, and he was doing everything you wanted to do, completely in control, looked like he was ready to go to the draft tomorrow. And then Sunday, he's like running the wrong sets. He's making a lot of these mistakes. He's kind of flying around. Couldn't really overpower people with his tools the way he did.
Three turnovers, four fouls.
Yeah, like one of them was just a set that Michigan runs all the time. He just throws the ball out of bounds. Like, isn't like stuff like that. And it's like, okay, well, this is the thing. He's the second most talented, whatever you want to call player on the roster in terms of physical ability and potential, but he's not going to be able to just go play 30 minutes and give you 98% good possessions on both ends of the court. You don't know what you're going to get. And I'm trying to think of a coaching dilemma that any Michigan rosters have where you have someone like that and how to deal with it.
So is any of it the fact that he's being asked to do both positions? And I only ask this because Michigan's went through this back in the day with Johns a little bit, where, you know, he a very talented big, and you're asking him to do two positions, and didn't really ever grasp either. And I wonder if some of this with Musa is that they're asking him to, you know, remember Juwan at like Big Ten Media Day and stuff. He's like, oh, we're gonna have him at the two through the five. He's gonna guard everyone, he's gonna do everything, all that stuff. And it's just like, and then sometimes you watch him play and you're like, maybe you should ask him to do like three things instead of maybe considering eight things. Cause he seems a little bit, especially when a game gets going, he seems a little ahead of his skis or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and I think there are probably plays you could go back and circle where, especially defense. Like, I feel like Michigan's had a lot of issues picking up in transition because of that. And you're playing so many power forwards. Like, it's hard to know which power forward guards which guy. And
yeah,
I feel like that those lineup combinations do. Like, am I at the five? Am I at the four? And what does that mean against this lineup that has, you know what I mean? So that's a different challenge. Offensively, I just think he's getting better. He's just picking up so much so quickly. It's just, it's a lot to ask him to do. What's the other option? To just play him 10 minutes at the five?
Yeah, like, option sucks. Right.
Like, Michigan technically had a choice last year to say, okay, Austin's going to be the backup center. Johns can just play the four, if you want to put it that way. And maintain his role. But no one was clamoring for Brandon Johns to play more minutes last year. Musa Diabate is going to need to play. And I think
some of this, dude, is like also just like he's just going to have to, like, you're just, this is just what it's going to be. Like, he's right. He started late. He didn't start playing until he was about 12, 13 years old, whatever. He went to four different high schools in 5 years. He's now at Michigan. It's going to just be kind of playing with your pants on fire a little bit. And you just hope, you know, if you're the staff, you just have to hope that when you get into January, right, that it is slowing down for him. But you can also make the case that the best thing to do right now, long term, is have him sink. You know what I mean? Just play through it. And when you make a mistake, you keep him on the floor.
The problem is the dudes next to him are also on fire. Right. Like, it's not like you have some of its roster next to him when you have Devontae Jones
lineup dependent too.
Gambling, Caleb Houston doing who knows what defensively.
There's probably a certain degree to, like, Diabate should only be on the floor with maybe certain lineups too, in terms of like who's out there with him. There's some times where, you know, they're at one point in the first half of that last game, you had Frankie Collins, Devontae Jones, and Adrian Nunez as your three guards. And I think Diabate was out there at that time, if I remember correctly. And like, that's not remotely feasible. And you're putting, you know, it's almost unfair, like, to the guys out there, because they're going to be running into walls. So like, if you're going to have Diabate out there, like those 20 minutes, like, yeah, he should probably be out there with as Eli. Experience.
Well, Eli, I don't know. Like, Eli are you putting Eli out there with? Like, I do think I like a little bit
earlier that like Eli and Devontae basically have to play 32 plus a game.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, Devontae just needs to play better to get to that point. Eli needs to play every minute because he knows where things are going, but the amount of things he's doing is just too much. It's the ask is
too much.
I like playing. I feel like Michigan tried to go to small lineups with Musa, like a Terrence at the four, and then like several guards. I like that idea as more of like a change of pace lineup. That actually, I feel like there's way too many lineups that Michigan's playing that don't make logical sense, right? Like they're guys who would play at different times, but the combinations don't really add up, right? Like I think they can do a better job of making sure that the five guys on the court fit together somehow. And there's different ways, different looks, but playing Brandon and Musa and Terrence doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Playing Musa with Terrence and maybe some guards. I don't know. Like there's just, the combos don't always seem right. And that'll come with time. I just think that just speaks to, I don't know that they really have a, they don't know what they have with so many of these young guys, right? Like Frankie Collins, he can get Michigan into its stuff. He had a drew a charge, got downhill for a nice basket. But then like, I don't know what else he can do except put his head down and drive to the rim when the game breaks down, right? So those are just things you got to work through, I guess, at this point.
Yeah. Let's touch on Atlantis before we get out of here. So we'll flip the page to State briefly here before I go record with Nick.
I have some quick Michigan State nugs.
Love it.
Some stats, some research here. I haven't been able to talk about Michigan State recently. Well, first, like you were at the Butler game. You want to hit on that briefly? I mean, that's like not a lot of Big Ten road wins going on. So say what you want about Butler. And last I checked, they were getting smacked by Texas A&M, but that's a good win for a Michigan State team that
it was a
needed.
It was a good, like, take the opponent out of it. You know, that wet, the place, it was like, it had that like big game feel, like, right, 10 minutes before tip off, jam packed, like the introductions were jamming and all that stuff. And for guys like Max Christie, Tyson Walker, especially, like a great kind of chance to experience what life is like at this level. And Christie was fantastic. He absolutely responded. I thought he showed kind of a big game quality to him. Like he silenced that place a couple times where like those types of shots where you're like, dudes hit shots like that. You know what I mean? And he did that. Walker, there are still moments where, you know, he gets a little bit too fast. He makes a bad decision, but I think the gap between him and Hogard is growing, and that Michigan State's getting more clarity. And then Marcus Bingham is outplaying at least my expectations for what he, I know there was all the buzz about him preseason, but like there's always buzz about him preseason. And I think we said on the show, like, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, we're seeing it. Like he's doing it right now. And can he keep it going? This is a great week for him, especially three games in 3 days, like get that consistency, right? Like string those games together. This is a great shot for, he's going to get Loyola. Then he's going to get either Auburn or Connecticut, which neither is great, but both have size, both have that kind of power conference size to them. Guys who can match him in length and physicality. He's going to play them. He's going to see them. So can he answer? Right. And yeah, I like where things are going for them.
So preseason,
give me your research. I'm loving it.
Well, hold on. Preseason, we had basically, I would say, three questions from Michigan State. It was, can Max Christie be their best player? I think the early returns say trending that direction.
Yep.
It was, who's going to be the point guard and how good are they? I'm still kind of at an incomplete on that one. But then it was, will someone step up at the five? And that was maybe the one I was least sure about. And it was probably one of the biggest issues for Michigan State last year. It was just never having a center. And Bingham has answered that more than any of those other questions. And that's by far the biggest development for this team, just how good he's been. And he, like, Michigan State's actually controlling the area around the basket again. And that was what really made last year's team so bad. So my stat here, last year, team shot 55% at the basket against Michigan State.
Yeah.
This year, teams are shooting 42% at the rim.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big improvement. Last year, Michigan State shot 54% at the basket. This year, they're shooting 63% at the basket. Obviously, it's just five games, but those stats basically paint the whole picture. And it's all Bingham. You know, you ask me, I mean, 2-point defense, they're 8. Block rate, they're 8. Like, this team was awful defensively last year for most of the year. And it was because they had no one to anchor the rim. And Bingham's doing that. And I think that deserves a lot of credit. I think the length on the outs on the perimeter helps probably a little bit. But not playing Foster Lawyer helps, but that's the difference for me with this team. And that's where it's going to start. I don't know really what the half court offense is going to look like against good teams. And I think that's probably a question to answer in time, but they have a defensive floor that I don't think they had last year, at least early on. And basically every good Michigan State team has defended the paint, right? Like you have to do that. And they didn't do it last year. And that was really one of their just biggest weaknesses that never really got fixed, right. I would say.
Right. I will say, I think this week, like this bracket works out perfectly for Michigan State. I think in terms of both what you're going to get out of your trip and what you can learn about your team at this time of year. So you get Loyola to start, right? This is not the Loyola team of last year. They lost some of their best players, but it's still a Loyola team that probably favored in the Missouri Valley, might be an NCAA tournament team, is going to help your resume.
Loyola team they're that kicked the shit out of some bye games. They're shooting piss out of the ball.
They're going to force you to defend the three-point line, right? This is going to be a really good defensive test for Michigan State to guard the perimeter, limit good looks. Loyola shooting
45%, 50%
on threes. Yeah, 45% on threes. So a good test there, but Michigan State's better. It's a better team. You should be able to get past there. Then you get Arizona State or UConn, or I'm sorry, Arizona.
Auburn or UConn, right?
Auburn or UConn. Neither is particularly good. Both that size. Neither has played anybody. I don't think either team has played a top 150 KenPom team last time I looked.
But they had dudes.
They got dudes. Like they'll test you, but Michigan State, I think, is better than them. And like you have a decent path to the playoff, to the championship, and a possible game against Baylor, which is one of the best teams in the country. So you get almost a second chance at a Kansas-type situation. You'll get a marquee game that, frankly, win or lose, helps you in terms of your profile for the NCAA tournament, and will also give you one more test. Like that, one of the jarring things about the Butler-Michigan State game was, holy shit, one team already played Kansas and learned a lot about itself, and the other team, Butler, had played a bunch of 280, 300 KenPom teams and had no idea really what it was yet and was playing with its point guard for the first time that year. And Michigan State was like, looked a month ahead of schedule in that game. And playing games like that have massive value. So if you can get to the championship, if you can get a game with Baylor, win or lose, it's a successful trip, I think, down there.
I think you're underselling. That Thanksgiving game will be a big time game. Whoever wins that, like Auburn and UConn are good teams. I feel like that's really, it's interesting. Don't
particularly like either.
All right, Mister. Okay, so they both suck. That's your take.
No, I didn't say they both suck.
What I'm going to say is interesting. Is
neither of them have played any? All right, let's see. UConn's opponents this year: Central Connecticut, Coppin State, LIU, Binghamton.
I think they're both going to be good. They're both going to be tournament teams. They're not Butler.
No, they're not. They're not.
They're good teams. They have talent. They have size.
Michigan State will be favored in both games. Fair.
I don't know. UConn's
maybe a toss up.
We'll see. I'll be curious how they play. But what I was going to say is very interesting prep, as far as like you go from Loyola, who's a very unique prep, and you have to guard them a certain way and go into your game plan a certain way. And then you could either get a UConn team that's just huge around the basket and great defensively, or an Auburn team that kind of spreads you out and wants to run and gun and plays up tempo. Like you could face a lot of different styles.
All right.
And those games are like, it's a legit every day game. Whereas you don't get that off day at all at the Bahamas, which makes it tough.
Auburn's also shooting under 30% on threes for the year. But
Auburn has a lottery pick.
They do.
Like
we're talking to Mike.
Jabari Smith is going to do? He's going to be a top six pick in the draft, and
for sure,
you see dudes like that, and they can go and win a game, especially this early. Like I mean, Bruce Pearl.
Auburn also scored 58. They beat South Florida 58-52.
Well, they're not there yet, but who knows what they do if they play. You know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. Like, you're making it sound like they're a terrible team. I
think Michigan State is better than both. If I'm lining them up right now, I'm favoring Michigan State in both of those games. All I was saying is, like, I think this bracket, like some of these tournaments where they might, you know, back in June, you look at the bracket and you're like, oh, okay, that should be good. And then you get to it and you're like, this is not advantageous for this team. Or you lose your first game, right, and you get Chaminade, or like some of these MTEs cannot really go your way. And frankly, if you want to sell both of these as good teams, and you're right, they're probably both NCAA tournament teams. What's good is that if you do get upset by Loyola, you still play an NCAA tournament team in your second game, which is not always the case.
That's the Maui problem when you have Chaminade in there. Or if there's the loser of that Auburn-UConn game is probably – like, Loyola is actually not really a bad game to draw either, because they're going to rack up wins in their league. So, I don't know. It's a good field. I mean, I think it's a good tournament. It's
better than Maui.
Do you like Auburn and UConn better than Syracuse and VCU? Like, I think Michigan State definitely would have the hardest semifinal. That's
for sure.
That's what I would say.
Those are
if you were going to look at the eight teams.
Syracuse lost at home to Colgate, and VCU lost.
VCU's terrible.
They lost to Chattanooga and somebody else already.
Arizona State's also terrible. So I definitely think Baylor will be there on Friday.
Hell yeah.
I don't know. I think the earlier games are going to be the good ones. That Thanksgiving, I think it'll be a fun test for Michigan State, assuming they can knock off Loyola. I
will be off the golf course in time for the game. A great Thanksgiving. Hit that Thanksgiving buffet at one of the casinos. Just straight class.
Straight class. I don't miss the Thanksgiving buffet at Atlantis. I've spent enough Thanksgivings there by now. I'm off that. It's a class tournament, though. All right, you need to wrap it up.
Nick, I got Nick sending me Zoom links. I got to jump on that one and talk some Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State, Ohio State, and all these good things. My real area of expertise.
Yeah, you've been studying up.
That's right. Dylan, do you have a Black Friday deal coming up for you?
We will have a Black Friday deal on the site. It's not live or anything. I know you guys have. Can we just talk about
the fact
I landed from my red eye in Chicago and got a Twitter alert that you were tweeting Black Friday promos at what must have been like 4:30 a.m. Vegas time?
Yeah, I was working on the Butler story. I was working on the Butler story, and I was a little blind at that point. Not drunk or anything. Don't relax, everyone, but more so sleep deprived, and I needed to sleep. So I slept for a couple hours, woke back up, finished the Butler story, and started tweeting some deals, bro. What's the problem?
Company man right there.
So look out for the deals coming on Dylan's site. Go to The Athletic, find one of my stories, click on that story, subscribe from that page. That gives your boy some big time metrics. That gets me that next contract, right? So I can stick around and not have to go serve you guys drinks at some bar. So, all right. Well, I'm still working on the close of the show, though, Dylan.
All right.
I'm working out a couple ideas. So until we get that ironed out, Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.